Welcome to the Story Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. Today, we unleash the addictive power of unfiltered storytelling with the first installment from our January theme, Hooked: Stories of Cravings and Compulsions. First, Elizabeth Maketa recounts the recovery and relapses of a chapstick junkie.
Welcome to Story Story Night, where you hear true stories on a theme told live on stage and without notes. Now, just in time for dieting, resolutions, and self-improvement projects, Story Story Night zeroes in on the pleasures and pains of our addictive personalities with a theme, Hooked: Stories of Cravings and Compulsions. Because you, no matter who you are, have something you love to do, that you hate to love to do, but you just can't seem to stop doing. It's a clash between internal desires and external realities. Bad habits, good times. I guarantee you, after tonight, with three featured storytellers followed by an open story slam, you're gonna be hooked on stories. But it's okay, because I have a hookup. And I'll start tonight with our first featured storyteller, and her name is Elizabeth Maketa.
A month earlier this month, I gave birth to a daughter, my first. Thank you. She was born with midwives, but had to go to the hospital for an infection. And she had an IV in one of her hands that wore out after a day, so they put it in her other hand. And then her foot, then her other foot. And I watched each part of her 7-pound, 10-ounce body turn dry and scaly as it got parched from the dry air of the NICU and wrapped with the IV tape. I wanted to rub oil all over her extremities. I wanted to touch each part of her and make it moist. But she was connected to wires and away from home and not ready for me yet. But I talked to her even when I couldn't hold her. I told her a bit about myself, some things I had learned. I told her one evening about need and how important it is to need people and not things, and how not needing too many things makes a person portable and able to travel light. And this lesson was one that I had learned decades ago from being addicted to chapstick. Since I discovered chapstick at age 10, I had put it on between 50 and 100 times a day. And those are actually real numbers. That's not just fuzzy math. Because I had to have access to it at all times, I had to keep it everywhere. So I would have vanilla in my glove compartment and strawberry next to the bed and rose in the pocket of whichever boyfriend I was dating at the time. And, you know, my favorite was Montana Huckleberry, which I kept in my purse. Had it everywhere. So fast forward 11 years, I had just graduated from college, and I was 21 years old, and I used the first paycheck of my first job, which was writing the Spark Notes for the Harry Potter series, to book a trip to New York. And I packed lightly my clothes, my notebook, my, you know, pencils, my toothbrush, and dozens of chapsticks. You know, I had raspberry, mango, coconut, mint, all of them, Montana Huckleberry. And I stayed with my friend Yoel, who was a first-year medical student. And I spent the day exploring. And when Yoel got out of class, I met her for oysters at this little restaurant near Battery Park. And I was telling her about my day when all of a sudden she interrupted me and said, "Liz, when is the last time you looked in the mirror?" I said, "Well, this morning maybe. Why?" She said, "Well, I think there's something wrong with your lips." So I went to the bathroom to take a look, and what I found were that both my top and bottom lip looked as if they had been burned. They had this awful, blistery, burgundy flakiness to them, and the corners of my mouth had cracked into these kind of sore-looking pink circles, like the red dots on clown cheeks. Perhaps, I thought, I needed new chapstick. So I dragged Yoel out of the oyster bar into a Walgreens a few doors down, where I got some Vaseline lip therapy and thought, by the end of the night, problem will be solved. But the next morning, my lips had gotten worse. And when I came into the kitchen, I found Yoel sitting at the table practicing her sutures on a piece of raw chicken. And still, she looked at me and said, "Gross." She suggested that I see a doctor. And then she started using her first-year medical knowledge to try to diagnose me, telling me all of the things that it might be, such as oral cancer. She said she hoped it wasn't something awful like spinosis cell carcinoma or something like that. She said, or worse, it could be syphilis. If it is syphilis, you'd better treat it. You know, untreated syphilis can lead to blindness. Or, she said, it could be Steven Johnson syndrome. That wouldn't be too bad. Well, except that it's untreatable. I still thought it was an issue of my needing better chapstick. So I went to the store and got something stronger with soothing herbs, lavender. But that didn't help either. And by the afternoon, the rash had spread up to my nose and down to my chin. So I decided to cut my trip short and go home, back to Boston. And on the bus, I noticed tactless people staring at me, like the bus driver and small children. By that evening, I'd had enough, and I had 2 weeks left in my college health insurance. So I decided to gather every chapstick tube I owned into my purse, and I frog marched myself to the University Health Services building. When I got there, I didn't know where to go. I mean, was this an ear, nose, and throat problem, or dermatology? Should I go to sexual health? The cancer center? In the end, the problem answered itself, because all of the different wards closed at 5 p.m., so all problems afterward were considered emergency. So I waited in the emergency room, surrounded by people with broken legs and arms. Finally, I got called back. The doctor looked exhausted, like one of those tired-looking interns you see in movies. And he said, "Well, what is the problem?" And I told him about my lips. "Have you tried chapstick?" I told him, "Yes, about 20 different kinds." And I opened my purse, and out came mango, mint, coconut, strawberry, raspberry, huckleberry, all of them, all of these flavors that I'd tried and that had failed me. He asked, "How long have you been using chapstick?" And I told him 11 years. And then he asked, "About how many times a day would you say you put it on?" And I decided to give a conservative answer. "About 30, I said, give or take. 30, he said. "Jesus." And that was actually the first time I realized that it could be something serious, because I was pretty sure he wasn't supposed to say Jesus in front of patients. He put on gloves and he examined my mouth, and he took a culture, and then he left the room. And when he came back, he said, "The problem is that you're addicted to chapstick." He went on to tell me that my lips had stopped producing moisture, and that the only way to fix it was for me to go cold turkey. Never use it again. I told him that that wasn't an option. I asked, "Can't you give me a prescription or something? What is normally done in these sorts of cases?" And he gave me a really scornful look, and he said, "We don't see a lot of chapstick addicts in the emergency room." But he left again. And then he came back with a sample tube of steroid cream, like the kind you use for athlete's foot. And he said, "You can put this on your lips twice a day, no more. If you come back here in a week addicted to this cream, I will refuse to see you." And then he left the room and me in it, surrounded by all of my chapsticks that hadn't worked. It was kind of a sad walk home, but I stopped very courageously in Harvard Square in the middle of Saturday night, and I started emptying my purse into the public waste bin among all of the kind of punk teenage kids and homeless people. And I tossed down, raspberry, vanilla coconut, banana coconut, lemon lime, plain, cherry, all of them, Montana huckleberry, every single one. So my purse was empty and I was out of chapstick. And I found that there is an invisible line that sort of divides before and after in most addictions. And that even in such a ridiculous one, that line existed. I found that there were certain things I couldn't do until my lips healed, such as kissing. When I tried to kiss my boyfriend afterward, he refused because he said I was scaly. I also found that I couldn't eat spicy food, or take big bites of any food, or drink from a straw, or use lipstick. And I discovered the lipstick about a month after the initial flare-up, when I tried to test the doctor's orders by using moisturizing lipstick, and I had immediately those starchy clown lips come back again and stay for a month. So that didn't work. And I've tried it several times since. No lipstick. Can't do it. But I found that there were some things that I now could do that I hadn't been able to do beforehand, such as swimming. Even when I was addicted to ChapStick, I would have to stick near the edges of the pool or the lake, because even in the water I needed to have fast access to ChapStick. But I found that now I could swim out further. I also found that I could travel more lightly, because instead of carrying a big purse to lug around all my different flavors, I could just put money and keys in my pocket and go. And it made me wonder what other things I thought I needed that I could do without. And the first on that list was the boyfriend. He was a placeholder, you know, the kind you like date while waiting for someone better to come along. And also, I couldn't get him to stop using the word irregardless, which is not a word. So I thought, I don't need him. And it also caused me to think about all of the belongings I had, that I had so many things that I didn't need, but they weighed me down. And so that year after college, I started giving them away. And it was sort of the beginning of my life as a generous person in a way, because I started thinking that if I had something and wasn't using it, whether it was clothes or jewelry or a candle or anything, that it should probably go to someone who loved it. So it sort of made me lighter in that way. I moved into a smaller apartment, and then I started looking at my time and my commitments and asking myself things like, did I really need to be part of this organization? Or was that friend actually a good friend? Or did I really need this job? Or was I just keeping it to feel safe? I reexamined every person, thing, commitment, and chose to only stick with the ones that really mattered to me, which was an amazing, lightning feeling. And it all started with ChapStick. So that is how ChapStick became a divider between my teens and 20s, and an addiction that I left in one decade to move unaddicted into the next. And that's my story.
Fabulous story, Elizabeth. Now, it's your turn. Submit today to become a featured storyteller for our upcoming February theme, Star-Crossed Love, Stories of Fated Attractions. Simply email a short summary to storystorynight@live.com now. Find more details at storystorynight.org under the Featured Storytellers tab. Up next, story slammer Richard Musler-Wright struggles to let go of his Legos.
This is weird, because I knew they were going to draw my name. And I should have told somebody. Now, I didn't actually come here tonight with the intention of telling a story, but I was talking to some friends up there, and I had mentioned that I was once asked to be on an episode of Hoarders. So maybe I have a story that fits the topic. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm the Lego guy. And do you guys know Legos? Do any Legos in the audience? Okay, I'm that guy. You know, I play with Legos. Actually, I do it as part of my job. So I have this great cover story. I don't know when it really turned into a disease. I suppose it was whenever my wife would say, "Hey, you have this huge stockpile of Lego kits. It's Johnny's birthday. Let's give one of these Lego kits away." And I would say, "No, oh God, no. We gotta go to Toys R Us and get him a new kit because those are my kids." So I have Lego kit number one. I think that was when I realized I had a problem. But I think the good thing was that I realized I wasn't alone, because there's a convention. In fact, there are a number of them. Okay. There are people who get together and celebrate Lego. And in fact, one of the biggest and oldest Lego conventions is in Portland. It's called Brickfest. And I go, this would be great. This is my tribe. I can hang out with a lot of people who collect Legos. In fact, I asked one guy when I went to this convention, I said, so you collect Lego kits? He goes, yeah, I collect Star Wars kits. And I go, which ones do you have? He goes, all of them. So I go to Brickfest. First year I went to Brickfest. It was sort of the highlight. First of all, again, I realize I'm not alone because I'm at this convention, and there's a point I look around the convention. I am surrounded by 500 middle-aged white guys. I go, I'm at home. And anyways, but the highlight of the Lego convention, especially in Portland, is there's a Lego store in Portland, and they have a special midnight sale for people who go to the convention. At midnight, everybody from the convention can go to the Lego store, and they can buy Lego kits at 90% off. Have you ever told 500 pudgy, middle-aged white guys, you can go at midnight across Portland, because the Portland Convention Center is nowhere near, it's in Tigard, to the Lego store at midnight to buy Lego kits at 90% off. Oh my gosh. It's like throwing chum to the sharks. It was amazing. And now, for people who were out of town, they said, okay, hey, you know, there's a special designated place. You can, if people have a car, you can hook up with these people and they'll drive you over there, because there's no easy way to get from the convention center to the Lego store. I go, this will be a great opportunity. And I go to the designated area, and an old friend of mine from Boise, John Walker, was there, and he offers to give me a ride in his Passant, and another fellow from Texas named John. So the three of us are in this little Passant, and we're driving to the Lego store. And this will be awesome. We'll go to the Lego store at midnight. I'll buy a few Lego kits. And at 12:30, I'll be back at my motel. But kind of like the song, you know, it wasn't a three-hour tour. It was much, much longer. We get to the store, and they open the store at midnight. And here's my best impression. This won't come through the mic, but it was... because there are 500 white guys trying to grab Lego kits as fast as they can. At one point, I had a Duplo set in my hand. I said, no, this isn't worth it, because there is now a line of 500 people waiting to buy these Lego kits, right? So I said, no. So I leave the store, and I sit down and just wait. And at some point, my friend John comes out. He goes, here, watch my stuff. I'm going to go back in. Okay. And 1 o'clock rolls by, and 2 o'clock rolls by, 3 o'clock rolls by. It's now about 4 in the morning. Now, I have not bought a Lego kit, and I realized maybe my disease isn't that bad. I'm okay. John, the person who had rode over with us, last time I looked, he had a 20-foot stack of Lego kits he had purchased. And this was about matched by my friend John. And I realized all of a sudden that there was no longer any room in the car, that I probably wasn't going to get home. But at some point, about 4 in the morning, somebody took pity on me and drove me back to the motel. And that's when I realized it was going to be okay. But to this day, I told the people from Hoarders no, I wasn't interested. They were looking for couples, you know. And they're going to interview the husband, and they're going to interview the wife and see how that worked out. But no, it's not that bad. Now, I do have a Lego studio, but I just want to let you know that, again, not all compulsions are bad ones, and Lego is an awesome toy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Story Story Night is brought to you by presenting partner the Boise State Story Initiative, venue partner the Linen Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Story Night theme is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for more stories from Hooked. Learn more at storystorynight.org.